Chicago, 2011. A cop is murdered. Police and prosecutors swear they have the trigger man. He swears he didn't do it. How far will each side go to prove they're right?
Like it's just one bombshell after another, you know, where you're like, what?
The story of a PlayStation, a brain-eating amoeba, and the relentless pursuit of justice. Off Duty, out now. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to more news from WBEZ anytime on the WBEZ app. Start each day informed. Tap and listen live or on demand. Available on iOS and Android.
The war with Iran has entered its second month.
President Trump has threatened to strike Iran's energy plants if the strait is not reopened.
And that translates to prices at the gas pump, now at levels not seen since the start of the war in Ukraine 4 years ago.
We've got a rough road ahead of us for the next few weeks, but it's temporary.
And Chicago in particular will feel the impact on trains, trucks, planes, and more.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Okay, let's talk oil. It affects the way we get around town and how products are delivered. It's also in toothpaste, aspirin. It's even in the fertilizer that helps grow our food. Later, we'll hear from an Illinois farmer about that. But first, let me introduce you to In the Loop sustainability contributor Karen Weigert and Cecile Shea of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, our two resident oil experts for the day. We get into some surprising ways that higher oil prices are impacting Americans outside of their fuel tanks. But according to AAA, the average price for a gallon hit $4 nationally this week for the first time in 4 years. And it's even higher at $4.41 a gallon in the Chicago metro area. We started by asking Karen and Cecile how they're being impacted by these rising prices and how they're adjusting. Karen went first.
The challenge with gas is it's often built into parts of your day that you don't change. So it might be built into people's commutes. And the benefit we have in Chicago is we've got the CTA to jump onto. So it's factoring in all sorts of daily decisions, but we have choices that we can make. But yeah, you have to think about it now. And you have to think about what the extra expense on gas might crowd out. Like, what is that going to impact in terms of a broader understanding of what money can go for? So it's changing things.
And while there are choices in our city, I mean, for me, sometimes I feel like I don't have a choice. I feel like I have to drive my car just with all the things that I have to do in a given day. And so I just pay it. And I just get back in the car and I drive. Cecile, what's it looking like for you?
So there's two sides. One is I'm an RVer, so I'm even more sensitive to the price of gas than a lot of people. I'm maybe thinking about if I really want to drive all the way to Alaska this summer. But the bigger thing is, among the three of us, I'm the one who remembers the two oil shocks in the 70s. And even after the price of oil stabilized or the crisis ended, prices kept going on, everything kept going up. And I think one of the things we're going to discuss of how is how it's not just gasoline, it's everything. It's the transportation of the things that you buy. It's the production of the things that you buy. It's the ingredients in the things that you buy. So in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I don't want to spend that right now. I need to save my money. I don't know what's going to happen 6 months or a year from now because of the Strait of Hormuz being closed, the oil spikes, on top of all the other inflationary pressures that we have.
Right, right. You know, the New York Times reports that the price of Brent crude, the global benchmark for oil, it's up roughly 60% since the war began in February. Tell me more about what that signals to you, Cecile, and whether we think it'll slow down anytime soon.
Well, the price is still not at its historic high, but it is very high compared to what we've become used to in recent years. The larger problem, in a way, is just needing enough product, for instance, to make fertilizer. And poor countries require that product more than we do. We have some stockpiles of food and other items here in the United States. You know, it's a question of, will companies that need the product to make clothes, because polyester and a lot of fabrics are made, people don't realize this, are made from petroleum. Vaseline is made from petroleum. I mean, you went through a whole list of other things that are made from petroleum.
Toothpaste,
products.
I'm still stuck on that.
That's right? And so the question then becomes, will companies that manufacture these items or that require these items start to run low? Immediately, no. But who knows? You know, this is the first time the Strait of Hormuz has ever been closed for a lengthy period. So we really don't know what what it means. And the alternate route, which is not getting discussed, the alternate route to get some of this oil out runs by Yemen. And of course, now the Houthis in Yemen have entered the fray. And so freighters are not wanting to pass that way either.
Mm-hmm.
So we could see a shortage that could affect production and transportation of a lot of other things.
Yeah, speaking of transportation and thinking more of the everyday, as we just talked about, we rely on delivery trucks, don't we, Karen? Right? They run on diesel fuel and they bring all the things that we order to our homes and to the restaurants and the stores that we visit every day. Are we likely to see an increase in delivery fees, perhaps? What do you think?
The short answer is we're starting to see that come through.
And
we think about transportation first for us. Like, we start talking about what is it like if you're driving a car. But all those things in daily life had to get to you somehow, too. And they started other places. And so you're seeing now layers of fuel surcharges that are going to be hitting from the very beginning. So if it's an agricultural product, from the field to how far it has to travel here, there could be different sequences of it. We're also seeing things like some of the delivery companies are offering dollars to their drivers to try to absorb some of that. So we're actually starting to see that. So you will see the cost of fuel find its way into the economy. And the question is a little bit of how quickly and when. So delivery surcharges we're absolutely seeing from farm all the way through direct to our homes. But then there's the question of some of those prices take a while to move through the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's probably 3 months or so for a lot of this to actually really hit the prices of, say, food in a grocery store. So this is the beginning, and those prices are being paid somewhere in that supply chain. So we might see a higher delivery fee, but somebody's probably paying a higher delivery fee. And the question is, when does that hit us?
Yeah, pick up on where Karen mentioned about groceries.
Yes.
Could we see grocery costs go up?
Oh, I think certainly.
Even more.
Well, certainly if the price of fertilizer goes up, which may be happening because a lot of people don't realize a lot of the nitrogen fertilizer that is used around the world is actually a petroleum product. So if that price goes up, that feeds into the higher cost. Obviously, farmers use a lot of diesel and other fuels in their tractors and in their equipment. And then as inflation goes up, you have to pay people more. So that raises the price. And then you finally get the food, the agricultural products to market. And that increases the cost.
Yeah.
So in theory, yes, it could, it probably will go up to some degree along with a lot of other things also. So and I also have to say, we at least in the U.S. are in a better position than a lot of other countries because A, we're wealthier, B, we produce a lot of oil on our own, C, we have stockpiles of various commodities. But you start to wonder what's going to happen in other countries, particularly very poor countries that can't absorb some of the shock that rich countries are in a better position to absorb.
Yeah. And Karen, you've both alluded to what this has to do with farmers, right? The closing of the Strait of Hormuz. Fertilizer and oil, I'm not sure all of our listeners are making the connection. Can you just explain?
Yeah, there are a lot of the fertilizer that is going on crops is petroleum-based in origin, and a lot of it actually has to do with natural gas in very particular. And it leads to some of the nitrogen fertilizers, and those are particularly important for corn. So they're actually different kind of fertilizers that go on different kinds of crops. So we're here in Illinois, a huge corn and soy state, and this is going to be a significant factor looking ahead. Now, many farmers purchased a decent amount of their fertilizer already, but you're talking about a product that is essentially a version of transition to natural gas in an interesting way. And so the prices are spiking for some of the components, but also for the global market. And you know, we talk a lot about the Strait of Hormuz and the percentage of oil that's going through. It's actually a higher percentage of some of the natural gas and then fertilizer. So interestingly, our farmers here are part of a global market that, despite the fact that we produce a good deal in the U.S., these are global commodities.
Mm-hmm.
And so our farmers are going to be experiencing some challenges when they think about fertilizer pricing.
Chicago, 2011. A cop is murdered. Police and prosecutors swear they have the trigger man. He swears he didn't do it. How far will each side go to prove they're right?
Like, it's just one bombshell after another, you know, where you're like, what?
The story of a PlayStation, a brain-eating amoeba, and the relentless pursuit of justice. Off Duty, out now. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
let's talk more about what Karen literally just mentioned and add a voice to the conversation. Brady Holst is a soybean farmer in Augusta. That's in West Central Illinois. He's also vice chairman of the Illinois Soybean Association. Welcome to In the Loop, Brady.
Thanks for having me.
So you put fertilizer on your crops in the fall, but some farmers are putting nitrogen fertilizer on crops this spring. Talk about how much of a price increase farmers are looking at if they haven't locked in their prices yet.
Yeah, so a lot of the fertilizer does go on in the fall, but there are some areas where farmers decide to put it on in the spring and then side dress in the summer to increase the efficiency of the fertilizer. So the fertilizers that are going on later, the increase in price has been a huge problem, just like oil and everything else. Mm-hmm. Surprising how much actually is affected by the strait.
Yeah, we checked in with Kate Huffman of Pink Hat Farm in Galva, Illinois. She said that the war in Iran is making her nervous about the price of 2027 fertilizer, and that the lack of transparency about fertilizer prices is difficult. Are farmers really buying that far out, Brady?
Some are. You can contract it ahead of time, but a lot of it you have to look so far ahead because it takes so long to grow a crop, and a lot of the profit margins in farming basically depend on being able to contract those types of inputs or sell things at different times throughout the year.
Mm. So help us understand that the impact there, the greater impact. Because, I mean, if you have to look that far out, what are the implications there?
It could be a change in planting acres, what crops you grow if you haven't put fertilizer on.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it would have an effect on yield. Fertilizer is expensive. Farmers just want to buy less of it, but it also ties into the ROI. There's a lot of calculations that go into picking how much fertilizer to put on based on what it costs and what the price of the crop produced is. So as that price goes up, it basically just pays less to put less on and just deal with a lower yield.
And Brady, the agricultural industry, it generates more than $50 billion of the state's GDP, according to the Illinois Farm Bureau. Talk about the ripple effects if the industry is able to bring less to market.
Yeah, I think it would be a real hit to the rural economies. There's been a significant slowdown in the last year for farmers. A lot of that has to do with just higher input prices. So things in the rural communities are a lot slower, and overall it's just a state. It is such a huge industry that it would affect a lot of industries and other things that ag's really supporting in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add, Cecile?
Well, I would just also add that there are also the same industry is dealing with tariffs and counter tariffs from China. So, you know, this is just another hardship for the farmers to endure. They're having difficulty exporting the beans that they raise to China. It's now going to cost more for them to raise those beans. So, you know, inflation is almost never caused by just one thing. It's mm-hmm. almost always a whole group of occurrences that kind of pile up on each other. And that's what we're seeing now. We're seeing various things that really started before the Trump administration with the reaction to COVID that are piling up and putting us at risk of a rebound of inflation. Again, I'm not saying inflation is definitely going to happen the way that we saw it right after COVID.
Yeah.
But, you know, it could.
So, Brady, I mean, sum it up for us. The what kind of effect could the higher costs of gasoline and fertilizer have on the price of groceries?
Yeah, I think it definitely will. From the actual farm products raised, it might take a while to actually get there. But a lot of the other things like packaging and things that are actually coming from petroleum, I think could have an effect, you know, in a month or something like that. Because if you're selling something in a grocery store, they're able to set the price so they can adjust prices pretty quickly depending on, you know, what's going into it.
That's Brady Holst, who's a soybean farmer in Augusta, Illinois. He's also vice chairman of the Illinois Soybean Association. Thank you for checking in with us, Brady.
Thanks.
Karen Weigert and Cecile Shea are still here with us. Karen, let's talk more about, you know, what you heard from Brady there and just what we mentioned earlier, right? The fact that oil derivatives are used to make all sorts of household products. We heard about fertilizer and that connection. How did oil become so embedded in our lives?
It is a huge part of our economy. And yeah. it's in the ways that you see, which is you talk about the pump, you talk about the oil. I mean, in this case, even thinking about farming, diesel is running a lot of that equipment. So we often think about that part. And that's a good entryway because transportation is kind of the anchor to how petroleum became such an important part of our economy. Mm-hmm. And that growth early on, and just over 100 years ago, the Model T and the individual transportation and cars, we built infrastructure around that that offered new possibilities. And there were some early choices on were cars going to go electric, actually, or were they going to go fossil? Mm-hmm. And they went fossil, and we've built an infrastructure around it. And when you're producing and processing that much fossil fuel, there are all sorts of derivative products that come from it. And so we've now built markets around those derivative products.
So many products. Yeah. I mentioned toothpaste, aspirin, antifreeze.
Yeah, it's a little spooky.
Insect repellent.
Plastics.
Really?
Almost, he mentioned packaging. He was mentioning plastic packaging, almost all plastics. You know,
wow.
the PVC pipe in your homes is a petroleum product.
Much of this I did not know until I had to research to get ready for this conversation.
All of your fabrics that have stretch, there's a good chance that that is petroleum-based as well.
What's the difference between petroleum-based products made from oil and those made from natural gas?
Well, big picture, the way those two come into the economy is the oil side is often the transportation or these physical inputs, primarily in terms of plastics. Natural gas here in Chicago is often coming into our lives for heating. So that's the fuel that is behind what powers your home in the winter when it's cold. Some houses are fueled by electricity, but typically it's natural gas, and it's often a part of the cooking infrastructure. So we actually use those products fairly differently.
Mm-hmm. How soon do prices of goods catch up to rising energy costs, Cecile?
I mean, that's an excellent question. And, the other question is, would they come down again when gas goes away? You know, when I was a preteen, music was important to me, like all preteens. And the cost of vinyl records between like 1973 and 1975 went up 33%. And that was because of the first oil shock. It turns out.
And look how you never forgot.
To this day, I remember it used to cost $5 to buy an album and now it costs $7, which is a lot when you're 14 years old.
Sure.
And it was because vinyl records during the first, particularly at the beginning of the first oil shock, were 100% petroleum products. The industry learned its lesson and it started putting less petroleum products into the production of vinyl albums. But they never lowered the cost. And so that meant that during the second oil shock, albums only went up about $1. So that was much better. But they went up from $8 to $9. You see, the price had not gone back down. So that's the other thing that I think concerns me is that certain people, certain companies may take advantage, and say, we're going to raise the prices now because the cost of bread wrappers is going to go up or this or that. So there's the psychological aspect, and then there's the actual, when does the actual price of the fuel start hitting these commodities? And that's happening in terms of transportation. It's happening already.
Right now.
Yeah. In terms of some ingredients, they may have stockpiles or they may not. So it's going to happen pretty quickly, though.
You're giving us so much to think about. You know, another fun fact I came across in my research, Karen, oil production happens not too far from Chicago. Why don't you tell our listeners about the BP refinery in Whiting, Indiana?
Yeah, we are about 17 miles, I think, from BP's largest refinery. It's in Whiting, Indiana. And they process enough crude there, they say, to meet the needs of 7 million cars each day. And it's something like 440,000 gallons per day. It's a huge refinery. It is very close to Chicago. So we are right in the middle of infrastructure around oil, as well as the oil that's in our daily lives.
Yeah, and people might not realize there's oil drilling happening in this state, right? In the southern part of the state?
Yeah, there's been oil drilling that was discovered kind of in the mid-1800s. And so there actually is oil infrastructure around Illinois. So this story is one that is always about history and always about community. And there's actually been history and community in Illinois around oil. And the big questions are, what does it look like today as the prices are changing, the economy is evolving?
Well, briefly, tell me what you're both keeping an eye on as the war drones on and prices soar. Cecile?
So one thing that would be wonderful is if we could change how some of these products are made or even get rid of them. You know, we haven't mentioned artificial colorings, which is, of course, one of RFK Jr.'s big hobby horses, and I think it's one that a lot of us can agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Those are almost all petroleum-based products. They used to be made from coal. Now they're made from natural gas. So maybe companies will finally decide, you know, maybe I don't need to make this yellow. Maybe people will eat it or take it if it's a pill, if it's white. So we may, you know, some good could come of it. We may find other ways to manufacture some things. It's not much better to use organic fertilizer, it turns out, than to use petroleum fertilizer, but producing it is better for the environment. So we may go back to trying to produce some more organic fertilizer. That's probably more in Karen's lane.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite the expert, but I do understand that it would be a little bit better for the environment. So that's what would be the positive thing if maybe some things change that were for the better. In the short term, though, I'm a lot more worried about global trade and the global economy, frankly, than I am about the U.S. because other countries are a lot more susceptible to rising fuel prices than we are at this point.
Karen, what's on your radar?
I'm definitely looking at how price increases are going to impact local Chicagoans and how for the non-discretionary need to drive a car, what's that going to look like near term and long? We have to watch the price picture. And then long term, there's the interesting question of, are there structural changes that come from this, particularly if it's not just a blockage in the Strait of Hormuz, but if there is significant damage to infrastructure, and it takes a long time for prices and product to flow. Then people will start to make choices about how to redefine the economy. When Cecile is talking about, you know, changing the inputs in a vinyl record, well, around the same time as when a big push on efficiency in cars started.
Yeah.
So at some point, the prices are high enough that larger structural changes happen in the economy.
Yeah. Karen Weigert's director of Loyola University Chicago's Baumhart Center for Social Enterprise and Responsibility. And Cecile Shea is a non-resident senior fellow on security and diplomacy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Thank you both so much.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Linnea Dominic, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.